Have you ever wondered how a crisis could destroy your brand, leaving a negative and lasting impression on your buyers? Welcome to Tell Me Something Good About Retail, the podcast of The Retail Doctor, and I'm your host, Bob Phibbs. Remember the Tylenol scandal from the 80s? What if that had been your brand? Or how about if your employees were on an embarrassing viral video that was circling the globe? On this episode, I'm talking to Melissa Agnes about containing and stopping the spread of a retail crisis. Welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, I have to ask the obvious. So how did you start out in crisis management strategist? You might have had that on your wish list when you were in fourth grade, but my guess is it evolved from something else. So
I did not have it on my wish list. My wish list was to teach, actually.
Okay.
Which I do now. So, you know, all of those points hit. But yeah, so I started in this nearly a decade ago when organizations were kind of just getting on the social media bandwagon, the whole rah-rah of, you know, social media is wonderful and we all should be doing this. And the way that my brain works, the way that I'm kind of wired is that I see risk everywhere. I quickly go from identifying risk to, without kind of consciously realizing it, to categorizing it as an issue versus is it a crisis, and then seeing mitigation strategies and then opportunity through mitigation. So I remember one morning reading up on, at the time, I was an entrepreneur doing social media strategy and just kind of web digital branding strategy for organizations, for companies. And I remember one morning in particular where, you know, catching up on my morning reading, and my brain just kind of started going, what about all of the risk? Everybody's so excited about social media and about tech and digital and mobile technology, and yet nobody's talking about the risk that it presents. Meanwhile, then my brain goes to, and the risk is so easy to kind of, at that time, not so much anymore, but at that time, so easy to mitigate or overcome or not be susceptible to if they start talking about it. And then once you get to that kind of level, there is unprecedented opportunity through, you know, the mitigation of that risk. It's kind of the pattern that my brain took. And from there, I became aware of the fact that crisis management was a thing, and that just kind of fed into, you know, the wiring of who I am. So I just kept absorbing everything that I could on the subject for about a year and realizing that anybody in this space was not talking about or addressing all of the changes in society, which were tech-based.
Well, and when you say that, yeah, you say crisis readiness. So I just remember back, who was it, Del Taco or Taco Bell or somebody, and some kid thinks it's funny to post pictures of him licking the taco shells in the restaurant. Would you call that a crisis?
So that's interesting. That's a great question. Because in 2009, the first incident like that happened when two employees at a Conover, North Carolina restaurant, Domino's restaurant branch, recorded themselves doing disgusting things to the food before it went out onto delivery.
I remember that. And that's right.
So that one was first being the first of its kind. So in 2009, a few things happened that kind of changed the landscape for crisis management indefinitely. And that was one of them. So that being the first of its kind, you know, everybody was outraged. Everybody was in shock and just mortified. And Domino's, because it was the first of its kind, Domino's didn't realize that in order for effective, successful crisis management to occur today, you need to both take the right actions to resolve the incident and to overcome and, you know, right, wrong, and all that. You also need to simultaneously be communicating effectively with every single stakeholder group that matters.
And well, that's the hard part, right? Is keeping those organized, because you want to say, oh, you know, we've taken steps to address that. But for a global brand, in fact, if I'm not mistaken, didn't that location close?
Yes.
Ultimately,
so that's what I was going to say, is that Domino's took every correct action in terms of those actions in that action category. They closed down the restaurant for sanitization. They prosecuted the two, you know, offending individuals. They revamped and looked at their policies to see how can we prevent certain things like this from happening again. They did everything right behind the scenes. But because it was the first of its kind, they didn't know that the times had changed and that they needed to communicate what they were doing in order for people, you know, across the country who were going, oh my God, I'm not going to order from Domino's anymore.
Exactly.
And Domino's doesn't care because they're not even responding to this. Meanwhile, they were, they just weren't communicating their response. As a result of that, Domino's stock price dropped by 10% and that individual store location closed down indefinitely. So
the risks are really high. And this was just the first, because I think it also emboldened employees to do more too, didn't it, Melissa? I mean, I know that doesn't sound great, but, you know, disgruntled employees, I think somebody, they had videos of like employees throwing new iPhones at Walmart or something, or iPads around in the back in the warehouse and breaking them. I mean, it's happening.
And human factor is always a risk. But I do want to address your first primary question. So your first question was, the Taco Bell incident, was that a crisis? Because that happened years later, and we had seen between Domino's and Taco Bell, we had seen a number of these incidents happen. What happens over time is that society becomes desensitized. So it doesn't make it any less important to mitigate or to prevent nor to respond effectively, but it didn't have, so the Taco Bell was more of a viral issue as a result of that desensitization versus the crisis that it represented for Domino's being the first of its kind.
So part of that is you're basically telling me somebody can be really outrageously horrible, cause a crisis, 2 years later, someone else do something similar, and we're like, yeah, whatever. Is that
kind of
how we are as consumers?
Yes and no. So, but that's kind of just the whole thing about being crisis ready, right? Is understanding all of those different risks, all of the thresholds between issue and crisis, what that means for your organization. Because a crisis for one company doesn't necessarily translate into a crisis for another company. So understanding what that means to you and your business, and then understanding your stakeholders and societal trends. So for example, I just had an example that I wanted to share, but even if you just look at like Starbucks, remember when
the two black men were
exactly, right? And they were, my goodness, they were dragged out in handcuffs, not dragged out, but they were taken out in handcuffs.
Right.
That is a discrimination that happens every day in this country, whether it's to any type of minority, whether it's racial discrimination, whether it's gender discrimination, those things happen. But because of societal trends, so our society today is taking a stance against that and saying enough is enough, you know, between the Me Too movement and Time's Up to just, you know, the fact that Starbucks said it was captured on video and everybody who captured it on video in real time was sitting there going, I'm white, you know, why aren't you taking me out in handcuffs? I'm just sitting here, I'm waiting for my friend too. So knowing that incident, so let me kind of regroup, that incident in and of itself happens in different locations around the country, around the continent every day, and society is saying enough is enough. So now societal trends, understanding and being in tune with societal trends, now says, okay, something that was already a reality or potentially already a risk is now exponentially riskier, right? Our exposure is greater as a result. So all of this goes to the same thing. So to answer your question on, you know, one thing happens today versus in 2 years, it also looks at, you know, newsworthiness of, or news cycle of that day, right? A slow news cycle means, so there's a lot of factors that we can't control, but what we can control as an organization, as a brand, is being very in tune and understanding what issue is versus crisis, what that means for your brand, what your high risk scenarios are, so your most likely high impact incidents to occur, and then who your stakeholder groups are and what they expect of your brand in terms of issue management as well as crisis management. Even
and
just kind of going through those motions says a lot. Go ahead.
And let's face it, most of them aren't going to be that outrageous kind of a thing. I mean, those get the headlines, but I'm sure there are smaller things. I know I was talking to luxury retailers and they say one of the challenges they have with technology is kids, I say kids because I'm 60, employees will take snaps of celebrity signatures on a iPad and then share it with friends or text who I waited on. And that's kind of a deal. Now, it's not the same certainly as Starbucks or some of the other ones, but there's still something about it. You think like, well, if this got out or if it gets in the wrong hands, and then, you know, even in a regular brick and mortar store, that's just one, an owner and several employees, we've always had the trouble of an employee who talks badly about a customer. It's just now it seems with social media that they're able to damage your reputation in much different ways than simply talking behind somebody's back on the sales floor. They're now taking that grudge out and amplifying it. Is that a pattern, or is that real, or is that isolated? What do you say?
No, it's definitely real. It's definitely a risk that social media brings to the table. And what it is that when I say technology kind of changed the game for crisis management, issue management, it's that everything is connected today, and every single human has, you know, a recording device and basically a media, you know, is their own media, and the ability to upload in real time, anything in real time to the internet. And then that reach becomes instantaneously global. So that's just reality. And people love to share what they think, what they do, what they experience, what they see. And if something is emotionally relatable, emotionally compelling and relatable, then it has opportunity or risk to spread, right? To go viral. Because if you see something and it touches you, whether it makes you laugh or it makes you infuriated or whatever it is, and you know that by sharing it, those that you share it with are going to relate to what you're feeling, you're going to share it. That's the whole nature of social media. So that's the real going viral.
That's the real scary part, is if it has an emotional hook that grabs you. Somebody's licking your food, or someone is doing something where you think that could be me, versus, oh, a company did this, right? It's that viewer who sees, oh, that could be me, or there's one
in my... How does it impact me? Yeah, exactly. What's the risk to me? Or this is appalling, you know, what's the risk to my family? So for example, did you see what happened to Crock-Pot at the start of 2018? Which is, you know, a scenario that nobody could have anticipated in a million years, probably. But it still happened, and it was still real. Did you see what happened?
Tell our listeners.
Okay, so This Is Us, which is one of the hottest television shows on primetime television today, emotionally compelling story, or, you know, piece of cinematography or just video storytelling, and they finally aired back in late January, early February of 2018. They aired how one of their main characters, so Jack Pearson, the patriarch of the family that, you know, 15.6 million viewers around the country love, they finally revealed how he died. And they revealed that, so there's this great emotionally compelling scene where Jack is cleaning the house, or cleaning the kitchen, I should say. And, you know, stories of flashbacks, because that's what the show is all about. It, you know, it takes people through flashbacks. And as he's going to bed, he turns off the slow cooker. So it's a generic slow cooker. It's not even a crockpot machine. And overnight, that's an ancient slow cooker, and it short circuits, and it sets fire to the house, and Jack dies of smoke inhalation. Well, the next morning, Crockpot woke up to a frenzy of thousands upon thousands of generational customers threatening on social media to throw out, you know, their great grandmother's crock pots that have been a part of the family story and Christmases and Thanksgiving for generations, all because of this one show that wasn't even a crock pot machine. And it wasn't just social media. It was, you know, morning talk shows were talking about it. It was making national headlines. Stephen Colbert talked about it in his monologue that evening. And
it's fiction. This isn't even a documentary. This is a story.
It's a fictitious television show with a fictitious storyline with, you know, fictional characters. And in the history of Crock-Pot, this has never, ever before happened, because they're designed to not let this happen. And so you'd think that this is outrageous. It's ridiculous. It's, you know, the social media frenzy, and it has no bearing, has no material impact. And yet Crock-Pot, being savvy enough, realized that, yes, this potentially does have material impact, right? Because it is the emotional association to our brand. Even just if in 3 years down the line, customers walk by or in a department store and they walk by our machines and they may not even consciously realize it, but they get this pang of, you know, this emotional trigger, right? That they may not consciously realize, but it's associated with, oh my goodness, I need to protect my family. I don't want my family to die in the tragic, horrific way that Jack Pearson died. And people buy, human beings, whether we like to admit it or not, we buy based on emotion. It's not logical, Absolutely. It's emotional, right? Data research shows that. So if your brand is associating a fundamental trigger of the death of your family and protection of your loved ones, that has potential material impact. So a story that any other, you know, a lot of brands, a lot of leadership and brands would have looked at that trending and gone like, oh my God, this is ridiculous. People, like, come on, nothing, and, you know, this has never happened. Or worse, they might have said something like, this is ridiculous. Let's just let it die down, you know, and continue on with our day. And then the risk is that long-term material emotional impact, right? And what that can have on the brand moving forward.
Did they take the high road and get out there in front of it somehow?
Oh, they did. They did. They were, so I have all these crisis ready rules to make things simple for people, for professionals. One of my crisis ready rules is how to, when you see that something is emotionally compelling and it's kind of spreading like wildfire, whether it's a potential crisis or whether it's a viral issue, two different things that feel very important to overcome and manage, get ahead of. There's a crisis ready rule that when you, in order to get ahead of that strong emotional relatability kind of impact, you have to respond in a way that follows this formula. So it's validate the emotions of your customers or of the stakeholders that are feeling those emotions. And then it's relate to them on an emotional level and then come in with the proof. And the reason being is that we can never trump emotion with logic. We just, when somebody is emotional, you know, the right side of the brain takes over, or the heart, let's even say, takes over the left side of the brain. But in order to get to that logical side of the brain, you have to go in through the heart. You have to speak to them in a way that resonates and validates that emotion and relates to that emotion, and then comes in with the proof of, to, you know, what makes this real. Yeah. And Crock-Pot did that. Crock-Pot, you know, you can go and look it up, and they have tweets and replies to people that say things like, oh my goodness, our hearts are broken with you. We can't believe this is how Jack died. So right there, they're validating the emotion, right, that triggered everything in the first place. And then they're saying, then they come in with saying things like, but we need you to know that your family's safety has always been what matters to us. It's always been our priority. And then, so that's relating, right, to that emotion or to what matters emotionally to that consumer. And then they came in with, you know, and here's links to the research and the studies and the science and the history and the proof, you know, to make everything that we're saying very real and very true.
Yeah. And you also talk about brand protection. I mean, if you were to give us like three or four tips about how to prepare, obviously when things go off, they should certainly contact Melissa Agnes, crisis management strategist. But I want you to think about that for a minute. We're going to take a quick break for our sponsor and we'll be right back. Field Agent is an on-demand platform that furnishes businesses with in-store information, shopper insights, and services to drive product sales, all through the Field Agent mobile app, featuring a panel of over 1.5 million shoppers. In a matter of hours, you can get photos and data from stores everywhere. If you need in-store visibility and you need it fast, Field Agent is the solution for you. Visit www.fieldagent.net/retaildoctor for exclusive content. Now let's get back to it. What could you tell us, both big and small? There must be some commonalities for all businesses before it gets to the part of a crock pot or having to call you and say, here, help me out. I'm desperate.
Well, here's the thing. So yes, it is. So no matter what size or industry or region your business is based in, or, you know, sector it serves, human beings are what make every business run. Internally, externally. So human beings are the common denominator. And so everything about crisis readiness is scalable across every single size of business, sector of business, industry, region, et cetera. I want to say that. I also want to say, don't call me when something happens. Get crisis ready so something doesn't happen. And call me to help you do that if you're not, you know, if you want help in any way. that is what I'm all about. I don't want my clients to have to need me. And those are my most, you know, happiest, successful, proud moments is when they call me after the fact. Okay, but so in order to get started, first is truly define an issue versus a crisis for your organization. And so a crisis is a negative event or situation that stops business as usual to some extent because it requires immediate escalation straight to leadership to take them out of, you know, whatever meeting or busyness they're in, because this incident requires their eyes, their decision-making, their directives, their strategy, because it threatens
I'm going to put this in an example. So you're telling me, so there I am, I'm a retailer, and one of my employees has accused this woman of shoplifting. Her husband says, no, she didn't. And the employee pulls the bag out and dumps everything on the floor and shows, yes, it was. And someone's filming it. And now it's up on Facebook. Would that be a crisis?
So I can't answer that question so broadly, but okay. I will say probably not. Because, so the thing is it's a long-term material impact. It's a negative event that threatens long-term material impact on one of to all of the following five things. So people, stakeholders, the environment, the business's operations, its reputation, and or its bottom line. So in the situation that you just described, there is hopefully process in place. So that was a crisis. Issue is basically, it's a negative event or situation that doesn't stop business as usual. It doesn't require escalation to leadership because it doesn't threaten that long-term material impact. So it's basically.
But it would feel like it. If I was the owner, I would be like, oh my God, everyone knows this in my little verb. Everyone is going to be sharing this. Either going to judge me by this one employee. I mean, it feels like a crisis, right?
But it's not. So yeah, absolutely. Which is why it's so important to understand the difference and to define that. So in that case, in order to be crisis ready for that, for example, you want to have process in place. So yes, an employee is caught, you know, shoplifting, it's caught on camera. That is a bad actor. That is not the company itself going and stealing from customers, for example, So that's a bad actor. Now, that doesn't mean it's not going to go viral and maybe people are going to be like, oh, they've got a bad culture. They hire the wrong people. So you still want to get ahead of that. But that's more about business as usual on hyperdrive. So making that very real, you're probably not going to go and get the CEO of the company and the C-suite out of their meetings to deal with this employee. There is probably process in place that is the protocol that's going to unfold in order to deal with this employee. And then leadership is going to get notified that this occurred, right? And they're going to be in the know about it. But it's still more about business as usual on hyperdrive versus stopping business as usual.
Got it. Okay, so that's one. And then, so one of your tips that you've got to be thinking of when some of these things can happen, so that you have processes underneath them, A, they don't happen, and B, if they do, something else kicks in. But without any of this pre-planning, that's when the crisis certainly can bubble over. And then, like, so if you're saying environmental, if we've been dumping oil into the Hudson River and some TV news magazine sees us doing that with our trucks, that would constitute a crisis for you because of the environmental feature. Is that correct?
The environment? It'll probably have that in the fact that you're doing that. First of all, you deserve everything.
I don't think any of my listeners do, but I just want to give examples so that we can.
Absolutely. But that's the whole thing, right? Is that because you that is self-inflicted. That's something that's going to probably have material impact on the organization, whether it's reputation, whether it's stock price, whether it's with regulators and lawmakers, whether it's, you know, with whoever. It's going to have long-term material impact on the business. It's going to be fines and sanctions, potential criminal activity and litigation. That is,
or I guess the same thing with stealing, you know, if your credit cards were all stolen, right? Target had a huge data breach. Home Depot had a huge data breach. I mean, we're getting accustomed to them, but there is a factor of, did you do everything to keep it, which does mean that you may not have been following the law, so that there's that becomes a material effect too. Is that correct?
That's a good example. Yeah. And so really for, you know, to give the takeaways, it's truly sit down and define issue versus crisis. Then that's step one. Step two is then go through and say, okay, what are the most likely high impact issues and crises that we are the most vulnerable, susceptible to? Because every single business has a handful of them. Every single business. I don't care. I mean, every human does, right? Well, even on a personal level, from disease, and just we do. So identifying those. Then from there, doing a deep dive into each one of those. So what are the preventable measures that you should be, could be preventing? And are you doing that correctly? Can you step up the game, et cetera? And then what are the unpreventable? Because not every risk is entirely preventable. So are you ready for the unpreventable? And in being ready, so the third step here is to understand your stakeholders. So have that consolidated list, which most leadership does not have in my experience. Have a consolidated list of every single one of your stakeholder groups, and then go through, you know, scenario A, what would employees expect of us? What would they care about? What matters to them? What's the emotional triggers? What questions would they have? How would they expect answers to those questions? And then go down every single, you know, one of those stakeholder groups and ask those same questions. You can do a world of, you know, give yourself a world of leverage that in the heat of the moment, when things start escalating and spiraling out of control very quickly, and the limelight is on you, and you know, the worst case scenario is your nightmare in reality, there's so much that you can do now and that you can build into the whole thing that I'm all about. Is crisis readiness is not about having a plan that's sitting on a shelf. It's about having a culture where your people intuitively, instinctively know how to do this. They're empowered to do this. And that in any incident, be it an issue straight through to a catastrophic crisis, your team and therefore your leadership team has solace in knowing that at the onset of that, our entire team knows exactly what's expected of them, how to meet expectations of our stakeholders, how to get ahead of it, how to continue to strengthen relationships so that at the end of an incident, you haven't just mitigated acceleration or escalation and stopped long-term material impact, but you're also coming out of it with increased brand equity, with the people who matter most to your business saying, wow, I trust this company even more. Something bad happened. We get that. Bad things happen in life. But I trust this company even more than I ever did before because of the way they responded and handled it.
That transparency is what it all counts. You're probably too young to remember when Tylenol crisis hit, but that was another one that I think somebody had altered a few bottles of Tylenol, and they ended up removing all of them off the shelves.
Yep. And then look at Jim. So that's the textbook example that's been used in like textbooks since then, which is kind of redundant. But look at Johnson & Johnson today with the opioid crisis.
Yeah.
It's the same company, and they're
baby powder too. I mean, they've just said, "Oh, we just tested it all. There's no asbestos," and yet people keep saying, and they haven't gotten ahead of it, right? Because they're somehow it's not getting across. And I think that's the point that, as we wrap up our time here together, that we're trying to make sure that everybody understands, whatever your size, that ultimately, trying to judge between what's a crisis and, did you call it, what's an incident? Was that it? Crisis?
Issue.
Issue.
Issue and crisis.
And then understanding that they have different rule books to go with, and then just being prepared, because to your point, Crockpot never could have seen that coming. Okay, so what happens if a TV show shows something similar and people,
right?
You can't, you'll drive yourself nuts, but you certainly can say, and especially if you're a smaller retailer, I think you say, these are the things that I need to be in on. Like, you can't figure this out. I need to be drawn into this, or these are the things not, and then try to, like you say, just think of what are those 10 items that we might end up having to deal with. You can say customer complaints, but it's far beyond that. It's when security issues are happened, or bad behavior is filmed, or something that just horribly goes off track, just thinking of, taking 10 or 15 minutes even in a store meeting just to start thinking about that would go a long way, instead of what I would think, if that was me, as you're telling that story about Crock-Pot, I'm like, okay, so you're the CMO and you've just found that out the next morning. Oh my God, no one will ever buy our product again. Because at that moment, you can't think straight. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. And also, I mean, even just starting that conversation, ask your team, honestly, are we the type of, if that happened, if we woke up and we were crockpot that morning, would we have recognized this as having potential material impact? Or would we be have been in, and there's so there, that bucket of, you know, the type of organization, the type of professional that would have said, oh, this is irrational, it's ridiculous, we're just going to let it die down, is massive. So which bucket would your team instinctively naturally fit in? That's just a question to begin. And from there, you can build upon that.
That's great. Well, I appreciate your time here to chat with me. How can our listeners find out more about you, Melissa?
MelissaAgnes.com, kind of the hub. And from there, you can find everything. I also have a book called Crisis Ready, Building an Invincible Brand in an Uncertain World, that takes you through all of this. It walks you through everything you need to think about, how to think about it, using examples and games and, you know, all kinds of fun things to make this real and to make it fun and not so boring, not so dry.
I don't think I've heard of how to make, that could have been the other title for your book, How to Make Crisis Readiness Fun, but I probably wouldn't have sold as well as your title you have now. Well, you've been very gracious with your time, and thank you so much.
Thanks, Steve.
I want to thank Melissa Agnes. What I really took away from this episode is that the time to prepare for a possible PR disaster is now, before you ever think that you need to react to one. On the next episode of Tell Me Something Good About Retail, I'll speak with Emmanuel Probst, author and teacher at UCLA, about how to create a meaningful trend in a saturated market. You won't want to miss it. Oh, and if you do me a favor and help spread the word about my podcast, or even give us a review on your favorite podcast platform, I'd appreciate it. I'm Bob Phibbs, the Retail Doctor. Thanks again for listening.
Tell Me Something Good About Retail is the podcast of the Retail Doctor. Visit RetailDoc.com to learn what makes Bob Phibbs the authority on brick-and-mortar retail across the world, who works with some of the biggest brands all the way down to the smallest mom-and-pops. As a listener of the Tell Me Something Good About Retail podcast, you can receive free information and guides when you visit RetailDoc.com and sign up for our exclusive weekly newsletter. For more information, to access the complete archives of past retail goodness, and to see about Bob speaking to your audience, please visit RetailDoc.com.